Podcastle, episode 495 for November 7th, 2017. Shadowmen, Sackmen, Half-Dark, Half-Light, by Malin Edward. Narrated by Mandalay Louise Charles. Welcome to Podcastle. I am your host, Setsu Uzume, and I am very pleased to present Shadowman, Sackman, Half-Dark, Half-Light by Malin Edwards. Some of you may recall Podcastle 387, The Half-Dark Promise by Malin Edwards, and if you enjoyed that one, you'll be double pleased to know that this story exists in the same universe with some of the same characters. We love it when we get to fall back into well-worn worlds. Your author, Malin Edwards, was born and raised on the south side of Chicago, but now lives in the greater Toronto area, where he was lured by his beautiful Canadian wife. Many of his short stories are set in an alternate Chicago and feature people of color. Currently, he serves as the managing director and grants administrator for the Speculative Literature Foundation, which provides a number of grants for writers of speculative literature. His recent publications include Longtime Lurker, First Time Bomber, and Faya Magazine Issue 1, Rebirth, edited by Justina Ireland and Troy L. Wiggins. Forthcoming from this author is also Heart of Ash, Heart of Steam, in the Steampunk Universe anthology edited by Sarah Hands. Mandalay Louise Charles has been running the Haitian Creole blog for 5 years now and is an advocate for the Creole language. The blog promotes the Haitian Creole language to foreigners and natives. The blog address is sweetcoconuts.blogspot.com with a Twitter page at Creole Lingo that publishes daily Haitian Creole words and terms for natives and foreigners. Mandalay just completed a project creating the first ever Creole alphabet song and animated video for the Creole language, as the alphabet is unknown to most Haitians at this time. This successful project was done in collaboration with MIT linguistic professor Michael DeGraff, and information on the Alphabet Creole song may be found on the Haitian Creole blog. And now for our story, but I warn you, this one will have your blood pumping. Clutch your clicking metal heart to keep it from leaping from your chest, and enjoy the story.
Shadowman, Sackman, Half-Dark, Half-Light by Malin Edwards. You keep running, even though you know you can't escape the 50-foot-tall pogo, but you were built for this. You are taller than all of the girls and most of the boys in your COVID 4 class. Your legs are longer, your steam clock heart is stronger, your determination is unmatched, even against the rocks they throw, even against the insults they hurl, even when they intimidate you and chase you home after school every day, all because your mother could not save their friends. They have not caught you yet, and they never will, because you will not let them. But you are trying to do the impossible here. You are trying to outrun the pogo, a kakadiab, an ugly, hideous entity no Timon has ever escaped. Not even your best friend, Bobby Brightsmith. And he knew the chance to send it slinking back into Lake Michigan. Yet you are confident. You have just rescued Bobby. You hacked his writing tentacled body off the pogo's scaly diamond-shaped face with your machete tantomakut. You wrapped Bobby's slimy, bloody snake form around your torso, and then you ran like you have never run before. Kuniela, your lungs burn, your legs are wobbly, and your steam clock heart is going taminga, taminga, taminga in your chest. It has never beat this hard. It has never beat this fast. You can feel the overdrive of its tiny springs. You can feel the rotating thump of its minuscule cam. You are worried. You have one more block to run before you make it home. You're almost there. When you arrive, you can ask your mother to look at your heart. After all, she did design and build it. But when you round the bend leading to your street, you see, through the gloaming of the half-dark, a shadowed figure standing in front of your house. You stop, or you try, but you can't. Not at first. you have underestimated your own determination. Your momentum continues to propel you forward, only a meter or two. Your arms flail, your legs give way. You skid across the hard, uneven cobblestones. Your hands and knees press against the cold ground, bruised and skinned by your fall. It is in this position you heave, seule fois, deux fois, trois fois, before you reach sticky, ropey bile that turns invisible in the weak light of a gas lamp when it hits the dark cobblestones. The gas lamp have never been this dim before, not on your street, not on Oglesby. Your mother and father made sure of that when you moved to La Petite Haïti in Chicago from La Petite Haïti in Miami. They do not mind giving a few more pièces de monnaie to the Lamplighters Guild. They want you, Michael Isabel, their Tiffy Cherie, to feel safe, especially on your walk home from school within the heavy shroud of the half-dark. They want their patients to feel welcome when they visit pendant journée, during the day, and les soirs, at night. But this is not welcoming. It is not safe. It is not comforting. And this is all because of the men standing in the middle of the street in front of your house. You are certain the shadow figure is a man. A woman would not participate in this awful game. A woman would not play jouet lago, hide and seek, in the darkness between the downcast light of the gas lamps, clothed in shadows, hoping you find her. She would not even consider the notion, knowing an 11-year-old girl would be walking home by herself in the half-dark. Ah, please, you have never seen a woman radiate such malevolence. It is apparent in the way this shadow man holds himself. It is apparent in the way he stands, hunched and menacing. You are quite certain you will never, in your lifetime, see a woman adopt this evil, wicked stance. The shadow man is, as your mother would say, pas bon qui n'encole. He ain't no good. And puis tout, as if to confirm this, you hear the shadow man say, ah, tishushu, I thought you'd never come home from school. And he say this in your father's voice. You are a smart girl. You should not be surprised your father is the shadow man. Not if you had been nosy when you were living in La Petite Haïti, Miami. Not if you had been paying close attention. Not when it was just you and him. You look confused. Allow me to remind you. Your mother was called to La Petite Haïti, Chicago by the old and wizened Lord Mayor himself, Jean-Baptiste Pointu-Sable. He enticed her with un pile d'argent, more money than you or she had ever seen, and the title Surgeon General. He needed her to help him combat the polio outbreak in the city-state. He wanted her to build steam clock hearts for the children whose sweet flesh hearts had been withered by the disease. He assured your mother he had people who could implement an assembly line production to churn out the mechanical hearts faster. He was desperate. 80% of the children in his city under the age of 12 were stricken with polio. Limbs and organs, but especially the heart, had no chance. He did not want one more Timon to die. You were sad to see your mother go. But you are more your father's tishushu than your mother's tiffy chéri. En plus, you and he would join your mother in Chicago as soon as she stemmed the tide of the polio epidemic there. Those were fun times for you. Despite your mother tending suffering, faceless children 1,300 miles away, your father laughed a lot. He let you do anything you wanted. He had no rules, save two. Go to school every day and don't leave your room until daybreak after he tucked you in for bed. Ah, you remember now. It has been 3 years past, but you remember. I see it. Mkawe recalled in those big, beautiful brown eyes of yours. But you don't know. Not yet. You take 3 steps forward. You are hesitant. You are tentative. You are wary. You refuse to believe the shadow man is your father. And yet, your father's rich melodic baritone has just slipped across the cobblestones and through the half-dark from him over to you. This was the same comforting voice that wished you fair bon rêve, beautiful dreams, after he pulled the covers to your chin each night in La Petite Haïti de Miami. You do not think about how he did not do this often for you in Chicago. Soon after you two arrived, he disappeared. In La Petite Haïti, Miami, you told yourself it was the coziness of your father's voice that made you stay in bed until the sun painted the horizon with soft strokes of morning warmth and fun, and not the dark shadow that skittered across his face before he turned, left your bedroom, and closed the door behind him. But you cannot lie to yourself in La Petite Haïti de Chicago. Do you see what he's holding? Bobby's husky voice startles you. The last time you heard it, he was screaming as you cleaved him off the pogo's face when the pogo crouched down to eat you. You squint into the half-dark, but you cannot make out any details. You believe the shadow man to be tall, très haut, but the half-dark plays with your eyes and the light from the gas lamps. The half-dark is a tricky thing. It is a dangerous thing. But you already know this. You realize Bobby's eyes, as small and black and beady as they are, can see far better than yours in the half-dark now that he is one of the pogo's face tentacles. Was one of the pogo's face tentacles. I can't tell, you whisper to Bobby, hoping the shadow man does not hear you. What is he holding? Bobby slithers around your ribs, across your chest and up to your neck, leaving a trail of coagulated black blood, but not as much as before. He wraps himself around your throat like a scarf and tugs you forward another step or two. His touch is cold and slimy, but gentle. Empi, you see it. The shadow man is holding a gunny sack. Once, and only once, did you leave your room after your father had tucked you in for the night. You were a bit of an odd child then. The dark did not scare you, but you were more of a curious child, an intrepid child. When you think back upon that night, time has dulled your memory. You are no longer sure if you truly saw a shadow flit across your father's face. The thought of it does not bring you unease, not much unease. Since the more you think about that night, the less defined that memory is. It does not make sense for such a malevolent cast to have been upon your father's face. That comforting voice you know so well is also playful, always hinting at an oncoming laugh, an infectious laugh, a belly laugh, a laugh you associate with your father more than anything else. En plus, as you play that night through your mind over and again, for what seems to be the thousandth time, you only remember being excité. You only remember the flip-flop thrill in your stomach as you disobeyed your father and got out of bed. The house had been dark. It felt empty. It felt lifeless. You and your father had said so the night your mother left for Chicago. But the night you sneaked out of bed, something was different. You knew where you were going, to your father's side of the house. You knew the route to his office by heart. It was forbidden to you, one of only two such areas in the house. The other was your mother's office. Your parents barred you from their professional space because they thought you might play with the sharp stainless steel instruments. They were concerned you might open the dark bottles of medicine or uncap the flat tins of unguent and smell and drink and taste. You were curious, but you were not foolhardy, except for this one time. You made walking through the darkness a game. You bumped into something, you lost 1 point. If you stubbed your toe and cried out, you lost 5 points. That did not happen, though. You know that house like you know the lines on your palm. Every turn, every corner, every hallway. You arrive at your father's office with all of your points intact. Your glee did not last long, though. The gunny sack was in the middle of the floor, knotted tight. Something was in it. It bulged, it moved, it seemed to be stained dark and wet in places. You could not tell by the spluttering light of the kerosene lamp, but the dark and wet looked like blood. And that's when you heard it. The whimpering, the crying. Someone was in the gunny sack. You gasp. You heard the sloshing of water in the next room. In your father's bathroom, he was in the bathtub. He was washing off the blood. He was the sack man. He snuck into houses at night and carried naughty children away. You were sure of it. You heard sloshing again, louder this time. Your father was finished bathing. He was getting out of the bathtub. His bath water would be pink. Its warmth would have dissipated. He would be cold. He would want to warm up. He would want to eat. He would want a full belly. He would walk back into his office any moment now. He would eat the child in the gunny sack. And if you were still here when he stepped again into this room, he would eat you too. His daughter, his only child, his tissue shoe. So you turned and went back to your bedroom. You did not lose your way. You did not make a wrong turn. You did not run into a wall. You did not stub your toe. You jumped into your bed. You pulled the covers over your head, and you never got out of bed again after dark. I'm not a naughty child, Papa. You say this to your father from quite a distance away. You still cannot see his face. You do not want to see his face. It may not be the face you remember. Ah, Tissue Shoe, I know you got out of bed. Your father's voice has his familiar, playful tone, as if he's admonishing you with a smile. You believe if he's smiling, his teeth are long and sharp and dripping with saliva, not like the teeth you remember. Papa, you cannot eat me. It would not be right. You do not want to cry. You refuse to cry. But you have never been so scared in your life. Not when your father went missing after you came to Chicago. Not when you liberated Barbie Bridesmaids from the pogo. Not even when you saw the gunny sack in your father's office 3 years ago. Come here, Tissue Shoe. Come closer. Wait. Barbie's whisper is close to your ear. He uncoils from around your neck, glides down your left shoulder, and twines himself around your left arm. His severed end rests in your palm, and his mouth latches onto your bicep. He bites down, hard, with his many small, needle-sharp teeth. You cry out. Don't worry, Bobby whispers. If your father eats you, my poison will kill him soon after. You do not have much time, so you move forward and halve the distance between you and your father. You can see his face now. It is lean, it is gaunt. He looks as if he hasn't eaten in days, weeks. This is not the hale, handsome father, you know. Pakuye, your father says, wipe your tears. I'm not crying. You have never screamed at your father before, not in anger, but it is true. You are not crying, yet you are close. Your eyes burn with tears. You refuse to let them fall. You do not want to show your father or Bobby or the half-dark just how afraid you are right now. Instead, you reach behind your head, between your shoulder blades, and slide Tontomakut from the sheath you sewed into your knapsack. Your father gave you this machete. Your father taught you how to use this machete. And if he tries to eat you, your father will die by this machete. Petite fille, est-ce que vous songez? Your father switches to English, but you have always thought he sounded unlike himself in that language. My beautiful little daughter, do you remember when I gave you Tonton Macoute? You nod. Do you remember what I told you? You nod again. I give this to you so you will always remember and I will never forget. Do you know why I said that? He does not wait for you to answer. Your father bares his teeth and in two quick strides he is standing over you. He is as tall as the street lamps. His empty gunny sack is slung over his shoulder. His teeth are as long and sharp as you imagined. Well, it's time for you to remember, petite fille, because now I am the sack man, and I have forgotten my daughter. The sack man lunges at you, his hands wide, holding the gunny sack open to swallow you whole with it. But your father taught you well. You are faster. You unleashed 3 swift rising butterfly strikes with Tonto Makut and ran the gunny sack to shreds. The sack man is surprised by your ferocity, but you do not pause. You sidestep the sack man as he tries to snatch you up with his thin, gnarled hands. You let him go by you. As he does, you step into form of Queen Alexandra's bird wing, whirling to gather momentum. Your footwork is precise. As you complete your turn, facing the sackman again, you disembowel him with 1 vicious slice. Your father falls to the cobblestones. He holds his intestine in his hands. He looks small. He looks frail. He is dying. And so are you. Your legs give way. You collapse next to your father. Bobby's venom is swift and powerful. The cobblestones are cool against your cheek. And P, the half-dark gathers above you and your father, coalescing into an opaque full dark cloud. You cannot see this, for your eyes are now closed as you lie dying, but black, wispy tendrils of the half-dark rush from every part of the city-state to be here. To be here with you. To be here with your father. To be a part of this cloud. To become one with me. For the first time in 3 years since I have arrived in Chicago, I can see the half-light of dusk. I can see the evening as it truly should be, for the half-dark no longer obscures it. La Petite Haïti de Chicago used to look this way, especially now, especially in winter. And P, I arrived, and I did not save the children of Chicago. I could not save the children of Chicago. It was not my fault. The Lord Mayor's assembly line production was flawed. It churned out defective steam clock hearts. Those hearts, my hearts, killed Chicago's children with their brittle springs and their wobbly cams. And so, the half-dark descended, and with it came the pogo. I was distraught. My despair was great. This must be a shock to you, finding out your father is the sack man and your mother is the half-dark. But the children of night are drawn to one another. Sometimes the results are horrible, like the pogo. Other times the results are lovely, like you. But never did I think the repercussions would be catastrophic, like this. But this, I can fix. Do not be alarmed. That cold you feel entering your nose and your mouth is just me, just a half-dark, just la sirène de la nuit healing you, removing the poison. And do not worry. Your father will be well. I will get him a child, a sick one, a dying one, one whose heart is flawed. That is what the half-dark does. That is what I have been doing here. Your father will heal once he has eaten. His strength will return. You may not like this. You may hate your father for who he is. You may hate me for who I am. But you are of us. You are a child of night. And now you have found your way. The people of Chicago do not love your father and me. But they will love you. You are brave. You fight well. Their children will no longer be terrorized by the pogo. But you will not be able to save them all. Do not fret. Pankitil, do not worry. Do not feel guilty. You cannot help this. You are not like me. You cannot be everywhere in this city at once. You must sleep. You must eat. You must go to school. Tandiske, you will save enough of them. Mothers will thank you in their bedtime prayers. Fathers will commission machetes from the local blacksmith for their precious tissue shoe. Children will chant your name out on the schoolyard. You will become their champion. So, get up. Pick up Tonto Makut. Go reclaim another tentacular child for her mother. Go fight your monster.
And welcome back. We are presented with several themes today, but the one that sticks out the most is family secrets. I was talking to Kalita about this story, and she had this to say. As children, we have the natural curiosity to know everything about our parents. We hang on to every word they speak, and that's how we learn to speak and how to interact with others and how to live, right? We also want to know what our parents are saying when they've closed the doors and lowered their voices and sent us off to play. We want to know even more then. I know I did. At the end of the day, as children, we not only don't need to know everything about our parents, but we shouldn't. Certain knowledge can steal from us the necessary ignorance of childhood. It can change and even ruin perspective. It can cause us to question everything else in our world. Or not. What do you think? Sometimes seeing our parents in the half dark can be the better way. We leave you with this quote today from Selena Godin. You cannot go poking skeletons in the closet without making maggots wriggle.